The State Affairs Committee is in session. We have a quorum, Senator Rohde, Senator Sturgiluski, and myself, Vic Fisher, are present.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rohde.
The Chairman of Labor and Commerce has requested that I attend the joint meeting on the intertie question, the intertie contracts, that question, I know you're interested. They're being held at this moment upstairs in joint meeting in Post Finance. I'm here for a quorum call. I will go upstairs if there's a matter that requires I come back. Please send someone up to get me, and I will, I'm here with those before us and will.
And we will give you a chance to review all of any bills that decide to pass out. Senator Sturgiluski, I decide to pass out.
I appreciate your courtesy, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
We'll protect your interests.
I know you will.
First bill before us is Senate Bill 27. We discussed that at length before. We have a proposed committee substitute that is based on our previous discussion. A letter of intent, again, per the previous discussion, and a fiscal note. Statement of intent deals to some extent with the fiscal note that the governor is asked to direct state agencies to pay for collect calls during the remainder of FY23 from funds saved by decreased travel of state employees. Sue Plummer is not here right now. Do you have any questions, Senator Sturgiluski?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I did miss one meeting that you had on this bill. It was my understanding, following Senator Rohde's comments, that you were talking about a pilot program, and I feel like I've missed something in between. So I feel it's a fantastically expensive to pursue this.
Do you want to explain?
Yes, Senator. In the last meeting, my recollection was that they decided to have a pilot program that would consist of the state agencies accepting collect phone calls at certain designated phone numbers. I believe the discussion was centered around about 227 designated numbers, and that they would accept those for 1 year as a pilot program, and that at least for the remainder of this fiscal year, that would be financed by money saved from the governor's decrease in state travel.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the fiscal note that we see before us, what does that reflect?
It reflects, as the attachment shows, an estimate of what the anticipated load would be. We were told over and over again that it was very hard to determine in advance how many calls it would be. Part of the discussion last time was that a toll-free system should balance out in terms of the decrease in the amount of travel necessary.
Mr. Chairman, again, I seem to be missing something. You talked about a pilot program. Do these costs reflect a pilot program or just full bore going into it?
Initially, the thought was that maybe if we do have a pilot program for 3 months of accepting collect calls, that would give us the information necessary to estimate where we're going, sort of how much demand there might be out there. The discussion further brought out that if we publicize a program of providing free telephone access to state agencies and then cut it off after 3 months, that would really not be serving the public. So therefore, it was felt that we should establish the program, have it functioning until the next legislature could obtain the information collected and decide where we go from here. And the fiscal note deals with that and would propose to have the agencies track exactly what kind of calls they're getting, try and prevent abuse, and then report to the next session of legislature so that we could then know what kind of demand there is. That's basically it. The I think they have.
Well, Ms. Chairman, I think the fiscal note is very confusing. We're within 3 months of the end of the year. We're talking about going into a pilot program, which would be those 3 months, I assume. Is that going to cost us $1 million? And then we're making a call of $2 million on next year's budget. We have an additional thing, if you're saying, okay, you save from travel and use those dollars, that's going to take, I would assume, a budget amendment to handle. I'm a little confused about what we're talking about on the fiscal notes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, as I recall, Sue Plummer testified that it was her opinion that they could reallocate those funds without a budget amendment.
Mr. Chairman, then what's $1 million?
I can't figure that out. As I look at the second page of the fiscal note, the monthly cost is $185,232, and if we figure 3 months, we're talking of $500,000 at most, rather than $1,076.
Yes, it appears to be inaccurate, Mr. Chairman. Also, evidently, it looks like these figures were for the Xena system, which has a basic charge of $211 a month, above and beyond the normal service charge, long distance service charge. So that figure near the bottom there is $47,897 a month is probably excess to the kind of system that we've been talking about. So
maybe we have to hold this over, because my understanding was that we were talking, were we not, about straight accepting of collect calls?
Mm-hmm. That's true. And unfortunately, we got this fiscal note.
It was just handed in the door.
Then I'm not.
Why don't we just hold this over and see what, try and straighten that out in terms of what the collect call cost might be. Because that was my understanding, and that's where we ended up.
I understand, obviously, the Finance Committee brings things together, but I'm becoming increasingly alarmed over the financial situation. And there's one thing we might even be more prudent to consider, some kind of, and I'd hope that's what we would see, a pilot program that might last a little bit longer to allow us to evaluate before going full bore into a program. We're really not sure what the cost is. So that's the reason I was pursuing. I do know that gets looked at much more closely in the Finance Committee.
I think when we get this back, this should provide for a 12-month total rather than a half year and a full year, as we did talk about. Because it should cut off during the legislative session. And we would be allowed to go through. Yeah, I guess it should be a full year. Anyway, let's go back to the collect call method rather than.
Yes, well, I have discussed this on numerous occasions.
Yeah, let's talk about
digital telecommunications.
Okay. We'll hold 27 over. Bob, did you want to testify next? You indicated
I can face the blame if you want to listen to me. I'll be relatively brief.
Well, if
I'm
not here, if you hear him, want to
shall I
approach him respectfully and give your name and affiliation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Or disrespectfully.
My name is Robert Wall, and I'm president of General Communications Incorporated in Anchorage, a new long line telecommunications carrier just began to offer service in the state. I'd like to also just mention for the record that I was director of the Office of Telecommunications under Governor Hammond from 1975 to 1979. I feel that I'm largely here testifying in the public interest and so forth. I don't see that there's much that our county can do to provide service. I think the concept is basically sound, and something like this is needed to make it easier for people in other parts of the state to have access to the state government. And I think the letter of intent is appropriate in that it acknowledges the time is needed to develop plans and assess the use of such a system and the specific needs of the people. I am concerned that there isn't acknowledgement of the need for an information operator or a service of some sort to help people find the right agency they need to call. I think, and I'll get to the fiscal note in a moment, I guess. I observed for some time in the governor's office in Anchorage in about 1977, where I had my offices briefly, the actions of the people there who were receiving calls from citizens who thought they'd exhausted all of their avenues, and was really impressed with the quality and the capability of the personnel there and the importance of having people who know where to direct people. And that, I think, is a very, very important thing to something like this. And I'm bringing it up at this point because I think you need some function like this even in a pilot system. I think if you accept only collect calls, not much is going to happen. And I think to make this service of value, it's going to require some publicity and some pretty careful groundwork. I think starting off with, I guess, collect calls is better than nothing, but I think there are some expenses that don't appear to be acknowledged in the letter of intent, at least. And publicity is certainly a need. I think the costs, Senator Zelensky, would be relatively low if there isn't any fund for, I mean, nobody's going to utilize it if there is no funding for publicity.
They did have an item in the fiscal note for it.
I just got the fiscal note, and I'm not going to be able to say much on that except that it seems a bit high. I have great concern over the fact that the governor directed state agencies to pay for collect calls from funds saved by decreased travel of state employees. I don't think there's a direct relationship there. I suppose that could be done if it were teleconferencing we were talking about as opposed to travel, then there's a trade-off. I don't see that enabling people to make toll-free calls to the state government is related to decreased travel, although if there's no other way to pay for toll calls, I guess you can decrease your travel. The fiscal note, this looks like one that I saw quite some time ago, and I don't recollect it in detail, but it doesn't look like there's much change in concept with the Zenith service and these toll charges. I don't believe it's realistic, but I can't say much. I know there are ways of using Watts numbers. It would be possible to have an 800 number or something, which would have to be rooted out of state because there's no intrastate Watts. But then there could be an FX or foreign exchange line back to a information operator or operators in Juneau. That would cost a lot less than this. And I unfortunately didn't realize this was on the surface, or I might have played a little groundwork myself.
Well, it sort of seems to me that we're obviously not ready to go with this. Yeah. It may be that we may want to have much more work done and lay this over to the next session.
Mr. Chairman, just a note on that. It's a really positive thing to do, and I think there's a barrier in between. I think I'm finding myself a bit disturbed. I certainly know Mr. Walt's reputation, and he's very aware of state of the art. If we're not getting the kind of information that we need, and to go off into a new thing to solve a real need out there without that latest information, It really bothers me, and yet I hate to see it just put off forever. I wonder if there's a way we can, with the resources there that might be available, get the right people together in a room to work this out. I hate to see it just go forever, and maybe there's some beginning steps. That's what I'd like to see. It could be evolutionary rather than rushing into a program not well designed that may do nothing more than say what we're getting on the dividend fund, where, or sometimes on the post-secondary, the scholarship loan. People can't get through to the numbers we set. And if we have that, I think overall we do more harm and get more anger because we've raised the expectation and then we can't deliver something to them. So.
Bob and I were talking earlier about something totally different. And at that time, we were talking about the fact that the state has a new deputy commissioner of administration for telecommunications that maybe will be able to approach us with a fresh view.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I hope so. I tell agree with Senator Dulewski. I think there's incredible potential here. And as always, we're faced with the dilemma of studying things too long versus plunging in and doing the wrong thing. But it seems to me that with the resources that the state has and the administration and the Division of Telecommunications and so forth, that something really creative could be developed. And a means for getting started in a meaningful way without committing an awful lot of money to assess needs. But something is more than this, I believe, is required. Maybe I can spend a little time with staff members, might be very good chairman, and try to help as much as I can.
You know, I would certainly appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much for giving us a little bit of light. Next is Senate Bill 83, which we've discussed on a previous occasion. It's sponsored by the Blue Ribbon Commission of State Personnel Act and deals with court leave for non-permanent and temporary employees of the state. First, of course, is Terry Kramer. Would you walk us through this rather brief bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 83 amends the leave provisions in state law. And the current statute says that leave is granted to full-time employees, be they permanent or temporary, and goes on to indicate that the employee must turn back any money received for service as a juror or as a witness at the time that employee draws regular state paycheck for that period of time. However, the exclusion section of the leave chapter 3920.10 in paragraph 7 says that none of the leave provisions, including court leave, apply to temporary employees. So those two statutes conflict, and as it was told to me at least, because the exception statute, section 310, has been amended more recently than the court leave statute, at least some agencies are saying that temporary employees are not entitled to court leave. What the bill does then is to say that notwithstanding the exception, in fact, short-term employees, permanent or temporary, non-permanent or temporary, are entitled to receive court leave. I think, as it was mentioned in the last State Affairs Committee meeting, the committee should note that this bill will not amend collective bargaining agreements. The exception statute does specifically say that any employee who's covered by a collective bargaining agreement is not covered by the leave, all of the leave statutes. So we're speaking of employees who are partially exempt and exempt, and also those few classified employees who are not members of the bargaining agreement.
Ms. Chairman?
This would cover partially exempt, and what were the other?
Those few classified employees who are not in collective bargaining.
Mr. Chairman?
Please.
Yes, just a comment. Sherry Shelley, of course, has been here and talked about the number of employees that under bargaining that would not have this, and am I to assume then we would really, I'm sure, look to the seeing that particular thing then be asked for in the collective bargaining statute, so it becomes, this becomes the first step then, I'm sure, to their
That would, of course, be subject to negotiations, I assume. I would, if I were on the employee bargaining end, I would ask for that. You have anything else?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the fiscal note shows no fiscal impact. Is that true?
That's because now it's so very difficult to determine with a random jury selection, whether there will be short-term employees who are actually called to serve during the time of their employment.
We'll have someone here testify for the division. Okay. Terry, I have a question. Actually, a couple. First of all, as I remember, we decided that the word, that the title should not have "and temporary" in it, because that temporary is already part of the statute, part of this particular section.
I don't remember that discussion, but I'm not an expert on the rigors of legislative drafting. So.
Okay.
Well, it does affect temporary employees, Mr. Chairman, by the reference to AS 3923-10, paragraph 7.
But the word temporary is already in the act, in the existing statute.
Yes, but temporaries are also excluded by the new citation.
All right. What does that mean? Why are we not amending 3923-10-7?
That section says the provisions of the leave chapter do not apply to temporary employees hired for a period of less than 12 consecutive months.
That's 3922-300-330.
Yes.
Sorry, Victor. Mr. McMullen, can you answer that question?
Okay, Mike, do you want to
hear it? I'm Mike McMullen, the Deputy Director of Personnel. I think the question was on the title, and yes, I think the title, the reference to temporary in the title is appropriate. The 3-10 parent 7 is in the section dealing with who the entire leave provisions do not cover. And the only leave provision in statute to which temporaries are not permitted would be entitled as court leave and none of the other. So the appropriate way to amend it is as drafted and not amending 3-10-7.
Excuse me, I was involved. Okay. I finance.
The 3923-10-7 includes temporary employees in a list of a whole list of people who are not entitled to coverage under any of the leave provisions. And by this bill, it clarifies that temporaries are entitled only to court leave, but not the other leave provisions.
I see. Okay, I understand. And you say the temporary should be.
Yeah, I believe temporary belong in the title of the act because of its reference in 3-10-7.
No.
Again, I'm not an expert in graphic.
Okay, I'm so. Actually, are we talking about non-permanent and temporary? Not permanent and also talking about temporary, or are we talking about non-permanent employees who are temporary?
Okay. With the adoption of the Non-Permanent Act in 1979, it called everybody who had been temporaries in the classified service non-permanent employees. There is now no provision in statute to talk about short-term, part-time help, etc., for the partially exempt or exempt service. And it has been, as a matter of past practice, to continue to call those people temporaries. So for the partially exempt and exempt service, you have temporaries, and for the classified service, you have non-permanent employees.
So this would apply separately to both?
Right. However, as Terry pointed out, where there is collective bargaining provision, those bargaining provisions would apply. I was suggested to anticipate the question of how many people are covered. And my estimate is that at any point in time, there are maybe 35 people in the state who would now be entitled to court leave by passing this amendment.
What is the department's position on this?
We favor it, basically for the fact that it clears up some confusion which has existed since 1960. It can't be terribly significant, or we would have heard more about it sooner.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
How much of an issue has been raised in the collective bargaining? If you have 35 that are covered, are there a whole bunch more out there that we can anticipate?
Presumably, everybody who is covered by collective bargaining, at this moment, everybody who is covered by collective bargaining, the contracts do not provide for court leave for the non-permanent employees. It was something they had prior to bargaining, and they have given up what the state took away, essentially in trade for something else. The specifics of what was traded, I don't know. I wasn't involved. But it's essentially something that across the bargaining table, it was give and take.
If we enact this applicable to 35 people, and APA comes along, any bargaining unit comes along and says we want the same thing to apply to our non-permanent members, how many more would this, and the precedent has been established, so we want it, how many would that then cover?
A neighborhood of 10 to 12,000.
Non-permanent?
Oh, excuse me. Non-permanent.
At any time, any point.
I believe there was a total of 600 non-permanent appointments all of calendar year 82.
And at any point in time...
500 of those were emergency guards?
No, you've got my report.
I'm glad you shared.
424 positions, 424 non-permanent positions were requested in calendar year 82. And I'm presuming they're all filled at some point. Yeah, at one point in time, which we've been using December 15 each year, there were 165 non-permanent employees on the state payroll. So at a point in time, 165, over the course of the year, 425.
Right. Next question is, how many of those are likely to require court leave at any point in time?
I have no idea. I'm aware that there's a statute on who goes into the pool for selecting juror panels, but how often that falls to an individual, and that individual being a state employee at that point in time, I have no idea.
Well, I have a hunch that even if this were applied to all the non-permanents, it would be just a minuscule impact.
Right.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I certainly make a motion to move the bill unless there's anything further here or the administration has further position.
If there's no objection from Senator Kelly, who's also present, we will move Senate Bill 83 with individual recommendations. Thank you very much for your participation. Next, we have Senate Bill 111, a teleconference. Dave, do you want to explain what we are on this?
Yes, we have a committee substitute for Senate Bill 111. As you may recall, in the last meeting, Sue Plummer from the Division of Telecommunications suggested two very small changes to the original bill. Clarifying essentially that the bill had read that anyone who attended a teleconference under the Administrative Procedures Act should have a right to hear everything that went on. But since the bill also covers video teleconferences, she suggested that we change the bill slightly to say that it would also in the event of a video teleconference that a person would have the right to see everything going on. Then there's also one other small change.
How does that deal with people who are disabled who cannot hear or see? Does that create a problem?
They cannot hear and see?
Well, let's say a blind person attends a video conference.
Well, it just says they have to be afforded the opportunity, not that they have to be able to hear.
Oh, okay. Thank you. You read the fine print.
Thank you, sir. There's one other small change on page 3, line 16. The original bill read that a vote by teleconference must be recorded, and there's Ms. Plummer thought that there might be some confusion that might mean tape recording. So that language was changed to say a vote by teleconference must be entered into the record. So that would not imply that somehow the vote had to be tape recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the only changes.
Chairman, I'll move the bill out of committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any discussion, any objections? If not, Senate Bill 111 will be moved to State Affairs with individual recommendations. I think today is the last day that we allow smoking in this bill. We're trying to obtain a legal opinion on exactly what the law specifies on smoking. We may provide fans so the smoke is blown away.
You see Mark Kelly coming on the camera, let me know.
Is there anything else to come before us today? If not, meeting's adjourned. Thank you all.
Interesting rules on the corrections.
Mm-hmm.
What transpired?
Executive order? Well, there are three do not passes in the Senate, Ray, me, and Cam Tank. And then Fergie and Bennett do pass, and then several of the guys in the House were either no pass or no rent. That's going to be a good fight to me.
It's going to be. I'm certainly a do not pass on that one.
Oh. Yeah.
The problem is we're going to be overwhelmed in the House, though, because it only takes the majority of the total. What do you want?
I'm sorry. I'll catch it. No, I'll catch it.
What do we do with 27?
This problem is. It just wasn't ready.
That it, Mr. Chairman?
That's it. We're done. Would you give some of the voters a chance to sign these bills?
They're just a little confusing. You know, I always take my stuff back with me.
Yeah.
You announced on the floor two bills, and we have three today, unless I'm hearing with an accent. And I do like to bring
It was my mistake. We had something else scheduled in the administrative journal, and I was asked by Senator Fahrenkamp's office to pull that up, and I asked Dave what else is ready, so he said 111.
Yeah. Well, it'd be helpful if we could have maybe our offices
okay,
get
a
quick
call
so we don't walk in and find bills we're not
expecting. We'll do it.
Okay, appreciate it.
But this will probably come up again Thursday because
what's that?
We've scheduled a bill on the time zone change. But figuring the House would have passed theirs,
mm-hmm.
and we scheduled the House bill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I figured it's
just
no
as time. Long as our office knows a few minutes
okay.
ahead, that's all.
Okay.
I'm safe.
But I figured we may just defer that one until the House bill is here. There's no point in passing our bill out of committee and then having the House come over and have a meet. Referral, whatever that is, where was it going?
The House bill.
Yeah.